TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, it is. Raised by Wolves on scorenorth.com. That's where you can find this podcast under the Score North Wolves umbrella on the website, scorenorth.com. Manny Hill here with Dane. I almost said Dane Cunningham.
Together. Not a person.
Together we become Dane Cunningham.
Dane Moore and Danny Cunningham are here, and lots to talk about with the Wolves after they come off an 0-3 road trip that was just not good by any stretch of the imagination.
One stretch the imagination was.
Yeah, Cat was good.
Tanking. That was a great road trip for tanking.
But yeah, that's where we're at as of the taping of this podcast, and they got Oklahoma City tonight. But as of this taping, they're 6 games out of the last playoff spot, and they're 5 games under 500. And I mean, we've talked about for a few weeks that, you know, playoffs would be kind of an uphill battle for them to get there. But then after the Sacramento game last week, we were kind of thinking, well, you know what?
Yeah, dude, last time I was here, we were like, we were both
it
like,
could happen.
It could
happen.
Yeah, it could potentially happen. Ago. Yeah, and then they go on the road trip, and it's an ofer, and now here we are, and there's 6 games out.
It's the
and
fourth ofer. That's the fourth ofer road
it's
trip.
Incredible.
They have 0-5 and 0-4 and 0-3 and then this 0-3. I mean, that's 15 losses right there. That takes you out of playoff contention. I mean, I don't think it eliminates interesting things that can happen the rest of the year.
No, but I think that the goals need to change, and what you have to find interesting
needs to change. Yeah.
Because, I mean, previously, whether or not they could make the playoffs was the interesting thing, and it's not that anymore because they can't.
What's your most interesting thing?
Whether or not Cat makes all NBA.
Yeah.
I think that that's the most, that should be important to him.
Transcends relevance of this season and the next.
That's the most interesting thing. And then I think how Josh Okogie continues to develop, whether or not Kata Bates-Diop can get consistent minutes the rest of the season, no matter the injury situation, which I don't know. And then what Andrew Wiggins continues to look like and if his minutes stay as high as they do.
I think for me, I'm looking at things like that transcending.
That matter more than just over these last 19 games.
Yes, but that we can use the 19 games to gather information that will put together, you know, thoughts that make us think about this team differently for the future. And the one in which I wrote about on scorenorth.com was I'm interested about Tyus Jones, and he, similarly to Cat, has a new contract that will start next season. He's not under contract with the Timberwolves like Towns is, but it's reasonable that that Tyus could be back next season. Mm-hmm. And whether
I think he should be.
Yeah, and yes, but it comes with a caveat of, are you comfortable with Tyus Jones being the point guard of the future? And we don't totally need to go down that. We've done that before, but I think it's very interesting. I'd like to see these 19 games where I think we can confidently say that Ryan is going to be giving him 20-plus minutes a night, maybe even more than that, to learn about how he fits with these players who will be on the team going forward. Obviously, there's Robert Covington, whose return is imminent. He hasn't played a ton with Dario Saric, has obviously only been here for, 26 games or 40 games, something like that. But the one, what I wrote about and what I think is really interesting is how Tyus fits with Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. And last year, that was, of 3-man lineups that Towns and Wiggins shared, their best 3-man lineup was when Tyus Jones was the third player there. And this season, the Timberwolves' worst 3-man lineup is Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Tyus Jones.
Mm.
So what do we do with that? Obviously, it's probably not as polarizing as one or the other, but if you are going to extend a 4-year contract or whatever to Tyus Jones, you should have a good idea of how he fits with your two quote-unquote franchise cornerstones going forward. And that's why I would like to see Ryan play him 25 minutes a night and to see, you know, what that group could come. Because I do think these final 19 games will be, they will compete. I don't think, it's not going to be tanky. It's not going to be messy.
No, but they have a tough schedule that a lot of games will look competitive that will probably result in losses.
But like, wouldn't you say that you can still, I feel confident to say that I'm going to be able to learn a lot about this team in the final sure. quarter of the season.
But you can learn a lot while they lose close games, yep. which I think is going to be the case. Like, I don't think they're Agreed. Going to actively try and lose games, but in the end, across the NBA, they have the fourth toughest schedule remaining. They still have right. Golden State twice. They have Philadelphia. They have Toronto. They have Denver twice. Like, they've got some very tough games over these last 19. So it's very, very possible that they are in competitive games on a nightly basis and lose five more than they win the rest of the way. Like, that's a very possible thing. And I don't know about five. Like, just don't yes, worry about my math, that? But you know yeah. what I'm trying to say.
That's kind of my assumption is something yeah. along those lines, like at best 500. But I care more that the games are competitive than I care about the results, because
me too.
It's 48 minutes a night where you can, again, gather information. And we have so little information on who Robert Covington is with this team. And even Dario Saric to some degree. And on top of Cat, Wiggins, and Jones, I think we can confidently say that Covington and Saric look to be pieces of the future of this team. So gather that information, learn what you can in semi-competitive games so as to make the most informed offseason decisions that you can, because there are important decisions ahead. Tyus, and then also Dario's up for a contract extension. He still has another year left on his deal, but you can, a guy on his rookie contract, you can extend there. And I don't know if Dario is lights out the rest of the way. Maybe that does happen. I would guess right now he doesn't get an extension, but it will be one of our talking points.
I would guess that Dario doesn't want to sign an extension because I would guess that Dario thinks that next year starting, and this isn't sourced, or this is just kind of the way I feel based on how this year has gone. If Dario gives himself a full year in the starting lineup and a much smoother season, he's going to have a better year statistically next year than he has this year, which yep. will result in more money from someone, whether it's the Wolves or someone signing him to an offer sheet. I think that he could get more money next summer than he'd be able to gather in an extension this year.
What do you think he would get this summer if it did happen?
I wouldn't be willing.
Like, what his market is if it happened this summer?
Probably 11 to 13 a year.
So I think that's an interesting number, because if you look at five players who were signed to extensions last year, there's Cat and Booker who are maxes.
Yeah.
And then you had Justice Winslow, Miles Turner, and Larry Nance who all signed them too.
Yeah.
And Nance was $11 million a year. Mm-hmm. And Justice Winslow was 13.
Yeah.
So if that is his market,
it's in that ballpark.
Yeah. Right about that.
Yeah. But I think that he, based on what he did in Philadelphia and what his potential is, if he has a good year next year, his market goes up.
I'm totally with
you. And I think that he doesn't have as much to gain by signing an extension this summer.
Well, he's been a weird kind of player, even in yeah. Philadelphia, where there's these, and it's manifest in Minnesota as well, where there's these stints somewhat extended where it's really good and it's really bad. And that's tough to assess.
Yeah.
Because you want to find a middle ground to be like, this is what we expect.
How high, like on the high end, what could he get? And I mean, it would probably depend on the kind of season he has in 1920. But on the high end, realistically speaking, that the Wolves could afford, what would be a typical contract for him?
Well, that's kind of the scary thing is what, yeah. if he does have an awesome year next year. Mm-hmm. And he does the Danny approach of waiting because
and
he thinks
I'm
it's
thinking
be more.
Of this from a Dario Saric perspective, yes. not of yeah.
right.
The Wolves would love to sign him for $9 to $13 million a year,
like a 4 and 48 type
yes,
of deal,
something like that.
The Wolves yeah. would love that, but Dario Saric could potentially make himself more money, and it would not be good news for the Wolves.
And
maybe
and
like
that
4 and 72 maybe or something like that.
Yeah,
Woj after the Butler trade went down, he had a piece and he threw out $16 to $20 million for Dario Saric, and it didn't seem you know, totally sourced or anything. He was just kind of, as we are right now, just mm-hmm. guessing, I guess.
Sure.
But I think if you're the Wolves and you do really believe in Dario, then you believe he's going to have a really good season next year. So maybe you up your ante a little bit more this year to lock him in at $12-13 million if you think his market value will be that $16 to $20 million the year after that. But as we say all the time on the show, it's so critical to save that couple million here and there, particularly yeah. now where, I mean, I think Cat's going to make All-NBA.
I do too. The way he's been, although, like, I watched Utah and New Orleans last night.
I did too, yeah.
And at the end, and I know that Utah lost, but it wasn't because of Gobert. Just the way those couple defensive plays he made in the last 2 minutes of the game
totally turned
really
the game around.
Altered that game, because they were dead in the water, essentially. When they were down, I think it was 111 to 105. And then
the Pelicans went on a 22-2 run in that game.
Yeah, I only watched like the last 4 minutes or so. Like, I'm not going to lie and pretend that I did. I watched the first half of Knicks Kings, and I saw that that game was really close. So I turned that on during halftime of the Knicks game.
Doing the league pass flip-flop?
Yeah, and I saw that that was close, and I had already seen that Miami's win and the tanking standings. Like, I was watching the tanking standings as it related to the
Wolves. It's interesting. It really
because
is.
Because that Pelicans win puts the Wolves within a half game of ninth in the tanking standings.
And
that's why we talked about
yesterday and Raised by Wolves, a huge difference between
so
the tenth
and
ninth.
So that was why I flipped that game on. I'm like, well, this could matter. And then that block shot of Drew Holiday that Rudy Gobert had.
That was awesome. That led to the fast break.
The tip-in that he had. I'm like, this guy's so good. Yeah. And I'm curious how much the success of the Utah Jazz will weigh into the voters' minds when it does come to that all-NBA vote. Because Carl offensively has been on an absolute tear over the last 6 weeks or so, I think it's fair to say, where he looks like an all-NBA center without question.
But just as good as Gobert has been defensively.
Yes, absolutely. And Carl has improved defensively throughout this year. I'm very comfortable in saying that. He's nowhere near what Gobert is defensively, he's improved. He's not what he used to be. But what Gobert did, and I'm just curious, it's going to depend on how the voters weigh winning, because the Jazz are going to have a much better record than the Wolves. They're going to be a playoff team, and the Wolves are going to be watching the draft lottery in May.
So are we thinking that two of the three all-NBA center spots are locked in pretty good?
Yeah.
At this point?
Embiid and Jokic
Embiid
are locks.
And Jokic.
One or two, I don't know which. Probably Jokic 1 and Embiid 2, I'd guess. But that's a flip-flop. Like, right. I don't think that's set in stone, but those two will be first and second team in some order.
So for that third spot, we're talking kind of a race between Kat, Gobert.
That's it. Because Anthony Davis doesn't play enough anymore.
Yeah.
Although I did think it was funny last night in that game. So he played 22 minutes. And then after the Pelicans took a lead, they took a one-point lead. Donovan Mitchell missed a jump shot. I think Julius Randle got the rebound, got fouled, made both free throws, so the Pelicans had a 3-point lead with 0.9 seconds left. Anthony Davis hadn't played in the fourth quarter. I don't think he played 22 minutes all night.
Subbed in for 0.9 seconds.
He subbed
in for
the last 0.9 seconds to guard the inbounder. I'm like, this is unbelievable.
Just a mess over there.
I'm like, they're actually doing this.
But So, and in case people are missing why this is an important conversation point, it's that if Kat makes All-NBA, his next contract raises from 5 years, 158 to 5 years, 190.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's about $6 million more per year. Which
good chunk of change.
Good chunk of change in a team for a team that's, you know, pressed up against the cap and is concerned about Dario Saric's next deal of how many couple million it goes one way or the other. I mean, this stuff.
You got to think about that luxury tax too, man.
Exactly. And so that's why this is important. Maybe one of the, when we do look at the future, one of the more important subplots, not just for the salary cap reasons, but to see, you know, what level can Kat get to? I mean, this has been, as you said, Danny, I mean, otherworldly, unbelievable what he's been doing. And
you could make the argument in the last 6 weeks he's been the best offensive big man in basketball.
I mean, maybe one of the best offensive players in basketball over the...
You could make that argument.
And you know he's not going to slow down for the financial reasons and wanting the individual accolades. And also as a, they don't think about the playoff push in the way we do and aren't necessarily looking at the standings. They're saying, I got to go out and win tonight, you know, to stay in it. So, I mean, there's going to be no coasting to Kat's final 19 games of the season. And
nor should there, and let's not kid ourselves. He knows what's at stake financially for himself. Dude.
Totally.
Let's not act like he's not aware of that. Like, he knows a very strong finish to the season will likely net him.
He put pen to paper on that contract, and he knows.
He's got $32 million at stake over the next 19 games. Like, he's going to do everything he can to get that $32 million, and he should. Like, that's what he should do.
Get your money.
And there's value, I think, for him, too. And it obviously, it's not going to be a wild offseason for the Wolves as far as, you know, they don't have max cap space. They're not going to go out and get a real...
In that draft lottery, it's going to be wild, though, Dane.
Yes, but so my point is if Kat continues to be otherworldly, and the Wolves do kind of have a strong finish. I think there is value in the eyes of a free agent elsewhere seeing that. It's like, you know, they can frame it in their mind like, oh, the Wolves would have been a playoff team last year if the Butler thing didn't happen. You know, so if Cat has this push and, you know, gets the Wolves up to the 9th or 10th seed, whatever, in the West to end it, you can kind of convince yourself, I think, as an outsider free agent that, you know, maybe I do make a difference to push this team really into the conversation. I think that matters, and I don't know what the opportunity cost of that is versus the $6 million additional dollars that Cat will earn next year, but it's not all bad. I don't think we need to like cheer against Cat by any means.
Oh, of course not. Absolutely not.
I do think some fans, and just kind of judging by Twitter and stuff, are like, oh, this is so stupid that we should be, you know, cheering against Cat to do this for the, you know, the long term of the franchise. And it's like, the reality of the situation is Cat's worth it at 5.158 and he's worth it at 5.190.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, if you want a way to look at it from a fan's perspective, you should want Carl to have 50 points in every game and the Wolves to lose on a buzzer beater. You should want them to lose on 19 consecutive buzzer beaters. Every game would be close.
Average like Wilt Chamberlain like numbers.
Carl would be dominant, and the draft lottery odds are the best they can be. I know that's never going to happen, and it would be incredibly frustrating to see them lose 19 straight games on buzzer beaters. Although it would be really cool to continue to cover, just like they lost on a buzzer beater again.
And reality speaking, like it would be impressive.
Oh, it'd be wild.
It'd be very impressive.
It would be wild, but that's kind of the best case scenario. You want this team to be competitive. You want Carl to be good, and you want them to have the best chance at drafting number one overall.
And again, the one thing I would add, and what I was saying at the beginning, is I want to learn. You want to learn about mm-hmm. about this team,
sure.
and what it is you do have, and which players bring the most out of each other. That's you have ample time to learn that down the stretch, and that's why I'd like to see Covington come back, even though that probably adds a win or two the rest of the way. But
I would say so. I do think that they'll be cautious with him. Like, I don't foresee him playing in back to backs. And they have a couple. I know he's not playing tonight, and who knows about tomorrow in Detroit.
You think he'll start?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think he'll start.
The message I've heard is that they're going to wait until he's 100% back.
As he
can be back, you know. And that does not to take away from your back-to-backs point. That might still happen. But I do think he's going to be a guy when he's back who's playing 30 to 35 minutes a night. And you know, in Ryan Saunders' eyes, a guy who's driving winning for this team and covering over so many of the issues that they've had these past few weeks that have namely fallen on the defensive end of the floor, where obviously he's not only an elite individual defender, he's an elite team defender who allows the Wolves to diversify so many of their defensive coverages, and it will be infinitely valuable to learn the different ways that this team can defend, because you do have Covington for three more years next to Cat, next to Wiggins, and you want to learn what that group can do. So it's a time to experiment, and maybe in some of that experimenting, losing happens because it's not the most optimal way to play. But
yeah, but you're trying things.
Trying things.
And that's kind of a sneaky way that teams have tanked.
Yeah.
It's, okay, maybe you're not trotting out your best lineup for as many minutes as you would be if you were actively chasing a playoff spot, because you want to learn about these other guys, and maybe it doesn't go well, but you know that it doesn't go well.
I think one of those would be playing Covington alongside Josh Okogie a lot.
That's something I want to see.
You know, and I don't think that would be their best wing duo. It would be interesting defensively, and that's why they should do it and try it, but it could subtract from their expected win total in that sort of way.
And both things can be okay.
Yeah, I was going through, there was that really good Covington stretch, the first 11 games when he was here, the Wolves went 8-3.
The honeymoon period.
And Covington and Okogie only shared the floor for 13 minutes in those most games.
Of it was the first night.
I didn't go through it.
Because I remember I asked Tibbs about that. They played like 6 minutes Tibbs. Together, and Tibbs laughed and said, "You want more minutes for Robert?" Because Covington played 41 minutes.
I
forget who was. Someone was out that game. I think Derek or Jeff or somebody was out, because then after that, Josh was out of the rotation. Okay. Josh was collecting DNPs for a couple games after that one. I can go look it up, but someone missed that game, and that's why that they played so much together then.
Right.
Because then Okogie just didn't see the floor after that.
So it was there was the 11 games with Covington, 8-3, and then Covington got dinged up. He missed a game in Portland, and then he just wasn't himself for the next 11. The Wolves go 4-7 in that stretch. And in that stretch, he got a little bit of time alongside Okogie because Rose was hurt.
Jeff Teague was hurt.
Missing games,
so they had 79 minutes together in that period also. So, but that's only 92 total minutes that Josh Okogie and Robert Covington, who could be your, who knows, maybe your
wing duo of the future.
Yeah, something like that. At least one of your wing lineups.
I'd be curious to see what the defensive metrics are for that. Was it 79 minutes you said? I'd be very curious to see what the defensive metrics were.
Take a guess.
I would guess good. I couldn't even imagine what the numbers would actually be.
It actually was terrible.
Really?
Yeah.
So hang on before you get to that. Derrick Rose was out against the Pelicans in that first game, and that's when they shared the floor for quite a few minutes, I believe.
Okay. To finish that point, it's Covington was bad then, though.
Okay.
He was dinged up.
Because he wasn't himself.
Yeah.
Sure,
and,
that makes sense.
And then I think also that they were losing in that time because Covington and Okogie aren't a good offensive pairing on the offensive side of the ball, so that can kind of snowball into bad defense as well. But when they were in the, and that's a small sample of 79, I think it will be a good defensive duo. They're two good defenders, but sometimes you can't just be one side of the ball. You know, you need to have both. And one way that I think would be interesting is if you slid Covington up to the four, and so you kind of went with like Wiggins, Okogie, and Covington as three wings there, and then a Cat and Teague or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this team has a bunch of power forwards and guys who, you know, you want to see Saric play. Tosh is still an important part of the team. Dang has been good there too. But I think again in the future, next year, Covington will play some at power forward as they. I think a new system will have this team playing a little bit smaller. That would be a modern move to make, and I think Ryan Saunders or any other coach is likely to do that. So, but again, just try stuff. Like, try, get weird. Do things you haven't done all year, and you know, that would be one. And again, if it hurts your wins a little bit, your expected wins, like, not the end of the world. You're not making the playoffs.
What do we need to learn from Ryan's? Because we talked about, you know, learning things about the players and everything. What do we need to learn or find out about Ryan Saunders in these last 18, 19 games?
There's a lot that I think we need to learn still. And because we haven't seen him with a fully healthy team, and I don't know that we will the rest of the year, just because you don't know what Covington's going to give you. And you hope that he gets to be 100%. And I'm still wanting to see that. But it's, you want to see the defense get better than it has been, because it's been bad. And there's really no other way to say than other than just bad.
123 net rating or defensive rating over that road trip, which is atrocious.
I forget what they gave up per game, but it was like close to 130.
Yeah.
They've given up over 130 points in three of their last five games.
It's not what you want.
No, that would be far less than ideal.
So what I would say is what I want to see out of Ryan Saunders is accountability for the end of the season. If you do want your team to play faster, do it. And if players aren't, hold them accountable to that and take them out. Say, we're doing this, and if you're not on board, you're out, or your minutes are down. If you want to shoot more threes, do it. You need to run sets and get players to be taking them and to be decisive. I mean, obviously we know Jeff Teague and Derrick Rose are two examples of guys who are tended to shoot the three. They're not doing it, even though they are important and good pieces on your team. You need to hold them accountable and say, we're shooting these, and if you're not, you're not playing. And I want to see that on a team level. I hold everyone accountable to the game plan. And if it isn't happening, then, you know, make your adjustments. And I do think there's been some of those. I think Gorgui Dieng out of the rotation is one, obviously. Dario Saric.
He looks skinny.
He does look skinny.
When he checked in the other night, because that was the first time I had seen him without a warm-up on, really since. Like, even I don't think I had seen him with anything less than a warm-up on, even in the locker room since the All-Star break. He looks skinny. And he was never like a big guy. Like, obviously, he's tall, yeah, but he was never like thick. But he looked like he definitely did not look the same.
Well, and apparently he got really sick over All-Star break and lost 20 pounds was the reporting on that. But, I mean, I don't know. It makes sense to me that he's out of the rotation and Taj has kind of shifted into the five spot. And, you know, that specifically, if pace and shooting threes are something you want to do, taking out a player who plays generally slower and Gorgie and doesn't shoot threes, that makes sense, you know? So it's, and once you have the healthy group, you can, I think you at least have the opportunity to see Ryan implement more of that. And it's something to keep a keen eye on. And it should be part of his assessment process as we, you know, if he is to have the interim tag removed.
Let me ask you this. Yesterday at practice, you asked him about pace and how he judged that. And he said that he likes to see the ball get across half court quicker, like with 21 or 22 seconds on the shot clock. Did you like his answer there?
So I did. And what I thought was interesting was he's not necessarily concerned about how long it takes to get your shot once you are in the half court. And that makes sense to me. You don't want to just get up. Fast.
You don't need to be the 7 seconds or less Suns.
No, you don't need to get a shot up fast.
Although that'd be so much fun.
But there is a vibe to pace, and that is getting the ball in the half court quickly and moving the ball fast. I think that's how I define Swiftly. Pace. And I would like to see more of that. And the reason I asked the question to Ryan was because we don't really have metrics that can measure the pace within a possession. You can see, you know, the total number of possessions and breaks it down in that sort of way.
Pace is kind of an inexact science right now.
It really is. I would say as much as anything else. And so I think the way you judge it is by watching every game and you know, kind of marking, you know, this was a possession we effectively used pace, and this was a possession that we maybe hesitated a little bit too much. And
does it depend on the opponent too?
Yeah. I mean, in the way they're transitioning back and defense, I mean, you don't want to just go like get a shot up to get a shot. I mean, everyone talks about the Kings and how they've ramped up their pace so much, and it's been a big reason why they have improved so much this year. But at the same time, and I know just having watched a handful of close Kings games, you really notice at the end of games slow down and they struggle in that, where they're like, all right, now we got to take a little bit more time to work for a shot. And that's has become a foreign concept to them.
So they've been playing fast for 42 minutes, and now the game is slowed down with 6 minutes left. And
it's not even. It's like with inside 2 minutes is when they struggle.
Yeah, right,
that's when it is. And
both of those Warriors games. I mean, that's what I think.
Well, I mean,
those.
If you look at the Warriors, swept them this year and they won all four games in their season series, and it was like by a combined 12 points. They should have won. You can say at least two of those games, but they couldn't find a way to score late, and that's why they lost. I do think that's what I want. In the West, though, I want the Kings to be the 8 seed.
Yeah,
I want to see them against Golden State. I know Golden State would sweep them,
sure.
But it'd be
fun
four games.
Yeah,
I would say, then let's use the Kings here a little bit. Make the identity of the second unit kind of Kingsy. You know,
sure.
It isn't going to be in there at the end of the game where you need to slow it down, but run, light those guys on fire to go. I'd love to see that, and I think that's been. When the second unit has been clicking, actually, it was like during that Covington time.
The second unit was the best in basketball. It was the best five-man lineup in basketball for about 2.5 weeks.
And they were flying.
Yeah. They could not be stopped.
And I just think when that group is so limited in terms of creators, again, Covington, no. Okogie, no. Anthony Tolliver, no. Those guys are not. I mean, Derrick Rose is your only guy who can really create a shot for you. So you mitigate some of that need for individual creation when you're just going. And... I think, and you look around the league, San Antonio is kind of that way too, where they really have this one identity with their starters. Obviously, that's kind of like, we shoot a bunch of mid-range shots, and then their bench comes in, and we shoot a bunch of threes. And
they're like two different teams there.
Yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily...
No, seriously, like they operate as if they are two entirely different basketball teams, their bench and their starter in San Antonio. It is...
And maybe that's a bit much, or would be a bit much
I think
this group,
that's probably the most drastic difference in the NBA between starting group and second unit in terms of playing style. But to their credit, it's worked. Now, they just can't figure out how to play defense in San Antonio lately, but it's
Which
worked.
Which is
When I looked up defensive numbers the other day, just like looking at Covington's absence and stuff and just where the Wolves were metrically compared to it and seeing San Antonio worse than them, I was kind of taken aback by it. Like I just, and I'm not going to pretend I watch a ton of San Antonio. Like I watch a couple games a month. But
I watched them last night, beat the Nuggets. They were, I mean, Aldridge has been awesome for them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why they've been winning because they can't stop anybody right now. They've, in the time since Covington has been out, so all of 2019, like that's just when it starts. He's not played
26 games.
Yes. But since, like, I'm just talking league wide.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Since then, the Wolves are 22nd in defensive net rating, or defensive rating, excuse me. And some of the teams below them you expect, like Phoenix and Cleveland and Chicago, and teams that are not necessarily trying to win. And then Houston, who's not been good defensively all year, and San Antonio was there. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. The Spurs are below them?
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about the what I went through and pulled together? Because I looked at it, and it's the non-Covington Wolves, these last 26 games. They're 10th in offensive rating, 23rd in defense, and 17th in net. And that is almost identical to Tibbs' first year here. You know, before Butler and them, they were 10th in offense, 27th in defense, and 20th in net. Like, only really just a marginal improvement, and that's pretty disappointing because essentially that 2016-17 team was a no Butler, no Covington group, and so
really young.
What it suggests, at least numerically, is no real major strides have happened over that time. I mean, obviously you can say Cat has improved some, but the team's offense as a whole hasn't. And, you know, that's on everyone. And then that's a plateau, you know, and they had Jimmy Butler and they will have Robert Covington and they will operate at a higher plane next season. I'm confident. But if you want to talk about making multiple steps forward, being, call that a, you know, 4 or 5 seed, something like that, it's not only do you need the addition of a good Covington, another high caliber player. You need everyone else to, you know, raise the tide and to be better, because a Karl Anthony Towns offense should be better than 10th.
Mm-hmm.
It should be. It was 4th last year, and that was obviously they had Butler there too. But I really do think that the Wolves should be one of the most dominant offenses next season, and that's on everyone around Towns to make happen.
How much of that depends on Wiggins too? Because Wiggins has not been good this season offensively. Like there is no other way to say that.
And that's why I think it was 10th in 2016-17 and now it's 10th now, is because Cat has gotten better and Wiggins has
not
regressed on the offensive end. And but feasibly Andrew can get back to some of that. That wasn't necessarily a great player he was. He's 43% from the field, 35% from three, but a major difference was he was driving 10 times a game, and now that's down to 6. So it's reverting back to some of those, you know, some of his old ways that don't plague the team as much. And I do think that's possible. I mean, we've literally seen it. You saw Wiggins do that 2 years ago when he was 22, rather than now when he's 24. It's, you just need to kind of get him back into being that player, which also isn't worth a max contract. I'm not saying that, but
no.
But it's an elixir to make your team maybe a top 5 offense next year with help on other margins. It's not just Wiggins. It's everyone else too.
Me and Danny talked about this yesterday, and when we've had you with us, we've kind of dabbled into the conversation a little bit about, you know, you talked about the second unit, you know, playing faster and everything. Is that maybe, do you move Wiggins to the second unit? Do you take him out of the starting lineup? Would that help him? Would that help the second unit? Would that make them play faster?
I don't think it would help the second unit. I think, and granted, Andrew's played 77% of his minutes the past 2 years with Cat. So that's part of why his numbers, team numbers, look pretty good. I think if you pull him away from Cat, his negatives would would be enhanced. I really do. I think it would get worse.
Even going up against other team second units?
I mean,
because
but isn't that,
that's kind of how it would get made up.
Kinda, but I don't know, teams scramble it so much. It's like, it's not necessarily like you're just playing the backups.
I mean, you're never just playing the backups, but I feel now he spends more time going up against opponents,
definitely,
starters, than he would if he were on a second unit.
I just have this opinion with Andrew that it doesn't really matter who's guarding him. He's pretty much the same player. His shot is
that's fair. That's very fair.
He just rises up. I mean, like, his jump shot that we think about, the classic fader, the one dribble pull up. I mean, that move, it doesn't matter who's guarding him. You can't defend that because he's so tall and jumps so high.
He just can't make it.
He just can't make it efficiently.
But I don't think he makes that shot or those shots specifically at a higher rate, depending on who's necessarily. I mean, or marginally so.
But does his numbers in terms of driving, getting to the rim, and increase
maybe
there? Because like you said, it was at 10 and went down to 6, and maybe a way to get it back up, not necessarily to 10, but closer to 10. Could be by going up against guys that aren't quite as good as the guys he's going up against now, because they are second unit guys.
I think so. I think there's always going to be
those mid-range shots that he takes, and that's always going to be a part of his game, unfortunately, even though he's not good at it and never has been good at it in the NBA. But if you can get him to the rim more against second units, that might be the way to help improve him.
And you know, I'm a little torn on it. My stance is, for the rest of this season, I don't think it's a move to the second unit. I think there's a middle ground there where it means he's maybe not playing end of games, or it's just some nights it's not, you're getting your 35 minutes no matter what. I think rather than just benching him and moving him to the sixth man role or whatever, there's a middle ground there. And then maybe once you've reconfigured your roster next season, you think about having that be, he starts the season as the sixth man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's just, in his head, that could feel like less of a punishment than this would. I'm not saying he's not deserving of that accountability, but if the goal is actually to get the most out of this group and not just punish them just to punish them, like, I don't know. I think it's important the way you do frame it to him. And does he deserve that?
Does he need fewer minutes? I mean, even if he's still
situationally
starting,
yes. Situationally, yes. He definitely needs to play less.
Because he's playing 33, 34 minutes a night, and he's not giving them a whole lot. So,
yeah.
Do you cut his minutes down to 26, 27 a night?
Where's your ideal minute count for him a night?
Oh, but that's my point, is it's in the aggregate. Maybe it's down to 28 because it's some nights it goes down to 22. But then there are some nights, and again, this is I'm talking in the mindset of wanting to get the most out of this group the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Some nights he should play 30 to 35 minutes a game because he is one of the only creators on the team, and that does hold value, even if it manifests too frequently in mid-range jump shots. If you can get him on the nights where he is driving, where he is distributing more, to be that player, then yeah, give him 35 minutes a night. If he's not, cut it to 20. So I don't think it's like, I'm not like drawing a line of this is your rotation. If I were the coach,
mm-hmm,
it would be.
Only Tibbs does that.
Yeah, right. but I mean, Ryan's been doing that too.
Nine.
Yeah. Like,
but not to the extreme that Tibbs did, because I mean, like.
But Andrew's played the end of every game. And he said, I'm going to keep playing at the end of every game.
But I'm just speaking like throughout the whole game.
Yeah,
like you or I could have predicted when guys were going to get subbed in, clockwork with Tibbs.
It was wild. I mean, it was like literally, yeah. And you like would watch other games.
It was like
and
it was on a piece of paper and it never changed.
I would tweet it.
It was laminated. Yeah. The paper was laminated. You could have tweets ready for who was going to check in, because it happened the same way every single night.
And to Ryan's credit, it's not like that anymore.
No, it definitely is not.
There is a shuffle in his rotations that happens in the middle 36 minutes of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The first six and the last six remain very defined.
Which I think is probably the case a lot of places in the NBA.
Yes and no. I think, but if players are on and off, and I'm thinking about the Utah game last night that we're watching, and specifically with the Jazz and what Quinn Snyder did, it really was even a shuffle in that last 5 minutes of the game, and maybe that's a product of better depth or whatever. I think, I'll put it like this. It's like that if your team's clicking.
Mm-hmm.
But if you need something different, then you diversify even at the end of games, and largely that hasn't happened with this Timberwolves team,
and
even in Ryan Saunders.
In Ryan's defense to that, there haven't been really any good options other than Andrew to close games. Like Derrick Rose.
He did with Luol. He did with Luol whatever game that was.
But Lou's been hurt now. Covington's obviously still out. Derrick Rose has largely not been. You okay over there, Manny?
Yeah, my headphones just came off. That's all.
Derrick Rose has largely not been very good lately.
Yeah.
For the most part. So there just haven't been other options.
The nice thing is that we're all in the same room, so I can still hear you guys.
Because you can't trust Cade Bates-Diop in that situation right now. So it's like, Ryan is closing with him, but who else is going to close if there's no Lou and no Covington and Derek's not good?
And that's kind of my point to maybe it's next season.
Yeah.
When you have a roster and configuration where you can say, we feel confident we have other options to go to here. Whereas they only kind of do now, which I think is your point.
And that matters. Like you can't he shouldn't be closing because there has to be another option. Like
Andrew plays the wing. Andrew plays the wing. How many wings are there on this team that are healthy?
Not enough.
Josh, Andrew, like then you play, they throw in some of the point guards. Like Kata now, but I think Kata's a 4-5. Like, I mean, and then what they've done is then it's been Jared Bayless who is out there in 2-point guard lineups or Derrick Rose. I mean,
and whenever those two are out there together, Derrick Rose constantly feels like he needs to just strap Jared Bayless to his back and carry him.
Yeah, right. It doesn't work.
No, not at all. I don't know the numbers, but that 2-man group has to be one of the worst on the team.
Yeah, it can't be good. It comes down to roster balance. You need roster balance to make sweeping rotational adjustments. They don't have that right now. Maybe if everyone's healthy, they kind of can at the end of the season. In theory, a new GM, president of basketball operations, whatever, they balance the roster out so that the coach, whether it be Ryan or whoever, is able to be flexible with the players that he plays. And it's something that's holding back the assessment of Ryan because he doesn't have that and he hasn't had that. So you gotta make his assessment on the margins and take everything into consideration, but it's hard. It really is. Yeah. I don't have a strong answer. These last few games have been disappointing. I'm trying not to get too caught up in, any hot streak or cold streak, which I do. I mean, last week I was in here when the team was on, had won.
We were all guilty of that, though.
I know.
That just wasn't you.
You weren't alone, Dane.
I don't think it was just us three in this room either. No. I think there are plenty more.
But then, I mean, we're getting caught up in the cold streak now, too. So it's just really, particularly now when the playoffs are out of the question, it's all about the aggregate. What has happened? Take all your information every single day, put it together, and make your decision. I mean, it's a hard one.
What do you think of, what are your impressions of Kata the last few games? Because we've seen him on the floor a little bit more. And what just early observations, small sample size, but what do you think? Because me and Danny kind of talked about him a little bit the last couple of episodes.
Greatly exceeded my expectations because my expectations are very low.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no way a dig on him, the person, or anything like that. I just, from what I've seen of him, which is obviously limited, and I'm taking, in all honesty, which is kind of flawed, what I watched him play in his 5 or 6 games in summer league, I really thought he wasn't a wing at all, and now he's played some there, and it's looked all right. He's been a third switch partner for the big, so I'm switching with Kat and stuff like that, and that's enticing. I'm very skeptical about his physicality, and what he, whether or not he's able to get bigger to guard bigger people or to get faster to guard smaller people. I don't think they know what they have in him. And that
should
might be
okay.
Should
he play more these last 19 games?
It's like 12 people before him.
Right.
So once you have Covington back, you have like Lou back like that. I mean, you can make the argument that he's one of your rookies on the rookie scale. You should be getting him opportunity. I just don't think if the priority is learning, I don't know. It's hard. I guess for me, I would like to learn more about the other pieces than I would of him. But again, it was good. I mean, it was a good run, and he's super long, and that makes up for a lot defensively.
He's looked like he's belonged on an NBA floor, and if he'd be playing in November, like say this was November, I'm not sure we'd be saying that about him. I think
that's why he did it.
Mm-hmm. I think that the time that he spent sitting and watching has really helped him. I think that this was kind of viewed as a developmental redshirt year in a way for him, and the fact that he is now playing a little bit and contributing is nothing but good for him.
Just develop that physicality, and I think his path to a consistent role in the NBA is to be a very high-level spot-up shooter. Mm-hmm. And even in this small sample, I haven't been impressed by that.
No, he's not been good from the outside, but he's done other things mm-hmm. pretty well.
And again, need more information to gather there. I just I need to see more before I'm thinking of next year's roster configuration being like, oh yeah, maybe Cade is an end of the rotation guy. And in my mind right now, he remains an end of the roster guy who I'm open to being surprised by. I'm just not. I would like to see the 9-man rotation next year have 9 players who are better than Keita. And
sure,
that's because he's a second year player who's the 48th overall pick. Like, he's met his value of the 48th pick. And, you know, if he ends up being something good, that's going to be a great value contract. And that's great. I'm just still skeptical, I guess.
Sure.
All right. That will wrap up for this edition of Raised by Wolves. You can follow Dane on Twitter at DaneMoreNBA. Follow Danny and all of his scribes on scorenorth.com. Follow Dane's piece more on Monday, every Monday on scorenorth.com. Follow me on Twitter at MannyHill84. And thanks for listening. Enjoy your Wolves basketball. And if you want, go on and give us a rating and also tweet at us your random Timberwolf that comes to mind, and we'll talk about that on the air if you send one to us. So thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves. For Dane and Danny, I'm Manny. Talk to you next time.